Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities. From the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Tonight on Revolt Black News Weekly.
I think it plays into the idea of the white fragility.
We break down the white replacement theory and what that means for the culture.
We're in this pivotal stage in our democratic process.
Then,
those who picked cotton created the very basic wealth of this nation.
Black America's take on reparations and what does that look like in 2022?
We need to be able to pass along generational wealth.
Plus...
Oh no, please, spoil it. Let them know what you saw and how incredible it was.
I'm with Mr. Entertainment as Usher makes another Sin City takeover. And Jay-Z's Roc Nation social justice initiative for Black America. All that and more as the Black News Revolution starts right now. Mr. Entertainment rolls back into Las Vegas and Hove and his social justice warriors are stirring the pot. What's up, everyone? I'm Kennedy Rue. Welcome to the show.
And I'm special correspondent Rochelle Ritchie. We'll get to all that in a bit, but we're starting with the threat of the white replacement theory, one that claims that as the black population grows, the white population will disappear. Now, it's been used by white racist tropes to carry out violent attacks on black and brown people across America. But is it a legitimate concern or another fear-mongering tactic for political gain? That's tonight's top story.
This is a purposeful resettlement.
White replacement theory? No. This is a voting rights question.
It's going to be millions of illegal immigrants into the United States.
Known as the Great Replacement Theory, the hateful notion disseminated across right-wing media argues that there is a conspiracy among Democrats to replace the political standing of white Americans with immigrants who will vote blue.
Unfortunately, we are putting out this information as if it's fact, and which we all know that it's not. It's just, it plays into the fears of white Americans.
The theory has since gained significant traction thanks to media personalities like Tucker Carlson, who's referenced it on his show in more than 400 episodes.
Our country's being invaded by the rest of the world.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists.
We've always seen this type of white rage. We're seeing it manifested in this era more so because Donald Trump has given rise to the white victimization.
You will not replace us. You will not replace us.
Such beliefs have instigated extreme violence against marginalized groups. From the deadly 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, to multiple mass shootings like the one in Pittsburgh that targeted Jews at their place of worship.
Multiple casualties inside the synagogue.
And in New Zealand, which targeted Muslims, El Paso, which targeted Hispanics, and in Buffalo, which targeted Black Americans.
My mother was Pearl Young, who was massacred, murdered, and killed on May 14th by an angry person believing the replacement theory.
I'll tell you what great replacement theory should be. We should replace all these people peddling hate and making financial and political gain from spreading racism. We should replace them with people who hold up American values.
Words of resistance and actions against it have come from progressive media. Republican Liz Cheney, who called out GOP leadership on Twitter, and some Democrats, with the House passing Resolution 1152, condemning the replacement theory.
This great replacement conspiracy theory is harmful to our country. It endangers our people, it weakens our country, and is a threat to our democracy.
Even though whites will be a permanent minority, white supremacy still will control the democracy. White supremacy doesn't die, it evolves.
We'll murder you. We will kill you. Because we're full of hate. We want to make America hate again.
But so much more must be done by all of us if we are to counter the hate that encourages division, anger, and violence.
We have to keep just speaking truth to power. We need to make sure that we are holding people accountable, not just the perpetrators of the crimes, but also those who peddle disinformation and push out disinformation as well.
Here to join me for more on this story, our Gen Z historian, Khalil Green, recent graduate of Yale University and social media personality and comedian, Free Blanche. Guys, thank you so much for being here. Let's get right into this. Blanche, I want to start with you. Has the white replacement theory proven to be a threat to the black community?
I would say yes, in the sense that what immigration, illegal immigration, to me does to the black community, it takes away jobs from particularly black men. And so the numbers show that it affects our employment drastically to the point where the lower wages actually puts us out of competition for jobs because most of us are in the service industry or service sectors of the population. So I would say in that sense, it affects us economically more.
Now, what do you say to the fact that the white replacement theory is basically this fear that there are policies being put in place politically that are going to erase white people, and that's a threat to our country?
I don't think anything is going to erase white people, but I do believe that there is something intentional with wanting immigrants to come over here at this rate. If I was a president and I wanted more votes, to me, I would do it. You know, let everybody come in that would vote for me. Because you think about it, if I can just walk across the border and have a better life, then I'd probably vote for that president or that party.
Khalil, give me your thoughts on, you know, what you hear Blanche saying.
When you look at events like what happened in Buffalo, New York, you see that the great replacement or the white replacement theory is a threat to black lives through violence, but also through policy. I believe Blanche is saying that immigrants, by and large, come here and vote one way. But what we see is that actually a lot of Latino voters both vote Republican and Democrat, with a large cohort showing out for Trump specifically. So I don't think there's any political advantage, by and large, with letting in immigrant voters. And this really dispels the myth that's at the root of the white replacement theory. And instead, the white replacement theory is often used as a way for racist people to target black and other non-white groups.
What do you think about that? Do you think it's being used as a target? I mean, you think about what happened in Buffalo. The shooter in that case wrote in his manifesto about the replacement theory, which was behind the, you know, barbaric reasoning for the murder of all those people.
Yeah, well, I would say that if that was a real thing, then it seemed like they'd be targeting Hispanics. Hispanics are the number one minority population in the United States. So to me, if that was a threat as far as replacement, the Hispanics are growing at rapid numbers, more than white, black, and even Asian. And another thing is the Asian community pretty much is on the same level or outpaces white America. So to me, the greatest threats for a quote-unquote white replacement would be the Asian community and Hispanic community. We have incidents of racism that happen, but I don't think it's just necessarily a pure threat to black people.
Khalil?
Well, when you look at the origins of replacement theory, you see that it's often rooted in the ideas of the threat of Negro rule, which is when, after slavery, black people were gaining political power, and in retaliation, white people would make up this idea that they were replacing the white race in order to enact violence. And you see this with something like the Wilmington insurrection, where white people literally overthrew the government when black politicians started to win elections. So when you look at how that evolves until today, it's not just black people being targeted. America is a lot more diverse now. There was the El Paso, Texas shooting,
right,
where a white supremacist did attack Latinos. But you also see that it goes back to its roots every once in a while, where they target black people specifically because the idea that black people and our political rule is a threat to the United States, it still holds true for a lot of white people today.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the shooting in El Paso. The guy in that shooting actually said that, you know, Mexicans are taking over and he wanted to kill Mexicans. So obviously this isn't just directed at, you know, black people. You also think about what happened in New Zealand, right? You know, that was a Muslim community. So it's not just black people that are facing this. If we don't think that the white replacement theory is a real threat, but clearly these shooters and these people that are committing such violent acts towards black people are using it, what is the solution to try and prevent this sort of violence? And I'll start with you first, Blanche.
I think you're going to have evil and hateful people in the world, so you really can't prevent anything from happening, because if you take away all the guns, people will use bombs and knives. So people are going to do things if they have an intent to do them. Do I think it's an actual threat per se? I would say no. Like, nobody looked at how many people died in Buffalo before the shooting or after. How many folks got victims of homicide in Buffalo before or after? Nobody cares.
But you have to think about we're talking about racism, acts of racism, not your everyday sort of unfortunate street violence. Khalil, let me get your response to that.
I think the question is, in terms of solving it, how can we better educate young people, especially those who are...
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again, because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Not often the targets of sort of racial justice efforts, which are young white men. Not that anyone, especially people of color, need to go out of our way, but it's up to white politicians and white educators to teach other white people about these racist ideas, and especially to target them while they're young, because a lot of the shooters in the most recent cases have been teenagers or people who are young adults. So we have to get them re-educated, start to weed out racism from our school system so they can easily catch on to these ideas as it comes up in their head and hopefully stop themselves before they go out and take it out on someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you hear some of that when it comes to the talk about critical race theory that a lot of people are pushing for in our schools. Free, Blanche and Khalil, thank you so much for joining us here on Revolt Black News Weekly.
Moving on to the legal headlines, including a major victory for NBA Youngboy. His case tops our gavel-to-gavel coverage of who's caught in the system.
Not guilty!
NBA Youngboy was found not guilty, bringing an end to one of the two federal gun trials he had been facing. The gun possession charge stemmed from Youngboy's March 2021 arrest on a separate federal gun possession warrant from an earlier incident and the rapper's home state of Louisiana.
This is interesting because it's a federal case, right? So, you know, the feds, they got a 96% conviction rate. So I know they was feeling some type of way when this was over with. But so the judge ruled that his lyrics could not be used against him because they were prejudicial. It doesn't help prove their case. And the judge agreed, so they threw that out. And so, shout out to Youngboy for that one, because on the Harry O'Chinny Chin Chin.
19-year-old Peyton Gendron has pled not guilty to federal hate crimes connected to the vicious mass shooting at a Buffalo, New York grocery store. With 27 federal hate crime charges, he could be sentenced to death.
You kill all those people, you will go to jail, right? Even if he pleads guilty, eventually changes his plea, he may try to avoid the death penalty, but he is going to jail.
Gendron is accused of killing multiple people at the Tops supermarket, where he opened fire on black shoppers and store employees because of their race.
This Buffalo shooter specifically targeted African-American community. He went out of his way, which is why he is being charged with federal charges. When it comes to the courts and it comes to the law, there is no negating what he did, right? You wrote a whole manifesto. You had a whole plan book written out. You were captured with your weapons and things of that nature.
And we will continue to stay on top of these cases. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I don't know what y'all say, man, but I ain't taking no reparations because as a black man, I got my pride and my dignity.
You know what? That's bull. You know why? Because you got bills.
That is a scene from the 2002 hit movie Barbershop. Welcome back. Now, it's been 20 years, and Black Americans are still having the discussion about reparations. Is it a check? Is it property? Or does the culture even care? We explore the two sides to making amends for America's greatest sin and what that looks like in 2022.
We as a nation have not yet truly acknowledged and grappled with racism and white supremacy that has tainted this country's founding and continues to persist in those deep racial disparities and inequalities today.
An emotional House Judiciary hearing in 2019. Billions of dollars in reparations to be paid to the descendants of 4 million Africans enslaved in the United States.
This hearing is yet another important step in the long and heroic struggle of African Americans to secure reparations for the damages inflicted by enslavement.
Many feel that investments for reparations made in the Black community, which would include direct checks as well as funding in education and housing, are not only morally justified, but given the extreme racial wealth gap, an economic imperative.
The Black-white wealth gap is a consequence of what has occurred over multiple generations, and it amounts to $840,900 on average between a Black and white household.
And we have to fight to make sure we understand America is a capitalistic system, and we have to make sure our children understand that we need to be able to pass along generational wealth so they don't start this life at a deficit.
But there are two sides to this debate, and 70% of Americans oppose reparations.
I don't think reparations for something that happened 150 years ago, for whom none of us currently living are responsible, is a good idea.
They need to know that people stand for reparations. You have so many white people coming out saying they are opposed to it. Well, they need to see who's for it.
Several recent developments suggest the political tide is turning. The passage of H.R. 40, a bill introduced more than 30 years ago and reintroduced in the House in January of 2021 to establish a commission to study reparations, was once thought an impossibility. Missouri Representative Cori Bush makes an emotional case in support of the bill.
The violence my family withstood from one generation to the next was not isolated. It was systemic to deny descendants of enslaved people economic and social opportunity.
And in California, AB 3121 was signed by Governor Gavin Newsom in 2020, making it the first state to adopt a law to study and develop reparations proposals, which could in turn influence other states to do the same. The 9-member committee, which voted in March to tie eligibility to lineage of slaves, released its first comprehensive report of recommendations, with the second to follow in 2023.
Now we're moving towards the second and final year of our process, which is the development phase, where now the 9-member task force will have intentional and substantive conversations about what the forms of reparations can and should look like in light of all of the evidence we've collected over this past year.
In Manhattan Beach, California, nearly 100 years after a Black couple's beachfront resort property known as Bruce's Beach was taken away by the city, L.A. County voted unanimously to return control of the land, now worth $20 million, to the family's direct descendants.
We're just so happy, and it's just so many of the ancestors that I wish were here.
And in June, in a landmark case that could open the door for other similar lawsuits, the Massachusetts Supreme Court ruled in favor of renowned civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump's argument to bring to trial the case of Tamara Lanier, a descendant of slaves who were stripped naked and photographed by a Harvard professor in 1850 to prove the inferiority of Blacks. Lanier is suing Harvard for inflicting emotional distress after they continue to profit from the photos, some of the earliest in existence and reportedly valued at $100 million, after learning of Lanier's lineage and claim.
If we're successful in front of the jury, which I believe we will be the first time that an American institution has had to be held accountable for what it did to our ancestors and make their descendants be able to get something of value from slavery.
Here to debate are political commentator Anthony Brian Logan and educator The Conscious Lee. Conscious Lee, I want to start with you first. There's been a lot of political action at the local level towards reparations, like this task force that's now in California. But do you think that Black people deserve reparations?
Most definitely we deserve reparations, not only for past trials, tribulations, but ongoing trials, tribulations. We know that, you know, we had the war on drugs, the crime bills, the ongoing things that's happened. I was born in 1990, and I would say there's political, social, economic, state-sanctioned violence that I have, you know what I'm saying, experienced, but I think this should be, you know, paid bill.
Slavery ended 1865. It's now 2022. We're still having the same conversation. It's not going to happen. It's a character dangling in front of us that had never actually come to be. And as far as the whole thing about deserve, I mean, maybe our ancestors deserved it if you were actual slave. But now, almost 200 years later, I don't think that word is appropriate.
But do you think that in some ways that Black, you know, descendants of slaved, enslaved people do deserve some sort of compensation only because it set us back so many years? So when you think about the racial wealth gap and things like that, doesn't it seem like this might be something to help put us on the trajectory to sort of catch up with white people?
I don't think it's really going to help, because even if it was to actually pass, where's the money going to come from? Tax money? All they're going to do is print and spend the same way they did with the stimulus. And now we see what the result is. 24% higher chicken, beef, pork, everything else in the store. You can make a lateral move. For what reason? No reason. At the end of the day, we're Americans. No, take advantage of that. Be an American citizen. Make some of yourself rather than looking at the past and saying why you're not where you want to be.
Hey, this right here couldn't be perfectly more descriptive. My man is sitting behind with a 1776 flag. He ain't never been tarred and feathered. He ain't never had to represent soldiers. He ain't never been tax representation. But he's sitting here playing tricks with times and saying, hey, you, descendant of African slaves, you are going far back in the past talking about the 1860s. But I think that I can have individual clout and individual credibility. I see what all the paraphernalia around him. I'm sure he know about the Joe Biden co-authored, you know, 1990 some crime bills. We would say that Black people disproportionately were impacted by those crime bills. It was state
sanctioned. But who wanted that? Who wanted that crime bill? It was us. It was the Black community. Hey, please save our streets from the crack, from the violence. We wanted it, and he did it. That's why we voted for him. We voted for him again this time.
This is not a negation of state-sanctioned violence. This right here sounds like victim blame, but even if you're correct, it does not negate that the crime bill was passed by individuals that's supposed to be giving us our general welfare.
Let me get to Anthony consciously. Anthony, what is the solution? I mean, what form of reparations would you support?
Nothing, really.
Nothing?
People come to this country. I don't support anything, because really, we're here as American citizens. Everybody wants to come here. They want to risk their life, their freedom, everything to come here. They want to spend a lot of money, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, come over here with an illegal coyote. They want to spend the money to come over here with $0 to generate money. See this iPhone right here? It wasn't even a thing up until just a few years ago. People create new wealth, new business all the time.
I don't get how you can historically sensationalize the freedom of 1776 and say that that part of the past is good and permissible while literally chastising your own people for your individual gain. I will call that, you know, respectfully, sucker shit. We recognize that there is a long legacy politically, socially, economically.
I'm a proud American, as are you. You don't want to leave this country. I don't want to leave this country. We're proud Americans.
Hey, listen, fam. You can shuck a job on Revolt TV all you want to, cuz, but I guarantee you're not going to get picked.
Obviously a very spirited debate, and I'm sure we could go on and on and on. We'll have it again for sure. We'll bring you both back and make sure we continue this discussion. Consciously, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us here on Revolt Black News Weekly. We'll be right back.
Jennifer Lewis.
Hollywood showing Jennifer Lewis some well-deserved love as she earned her star on the Walk of Fame in Los Angeles. Welcome back, guys. I'm Kennedy Rue with this week's Entertainment Remix. We're on the ground as Jay-Z and Tamika Mallory take on social justice. But first, it's Diddy's way or no way as he celebrates a big anniversary.
It's kind of hard with you not around. Know you in heaven smiling down. Watching us while we pray for you.
It's 25 years this week that Diddy released his landmark album, No Way Out. It spawned the blockbuster hit I'll Be Missing You, which was inspired by the death of the notorious B.I.G. The song featured his wife, Faith Evans, as well as the group 112. Tell me how that came about. How did you guys end up getting on that track?
Wow, so 112, we were always studio rats, as they would say it, always in the studio. And one of the things that we benefit off of being in the studio a lot of the times was Puff would just come in and say, hey guys, I need y'all. And we'd go from one room to the next, whether that was us writing for someone he was producing for, or that's just getting on a hook that he was recording with. And we knew that as a company and as a family, we wanted to do a song that was to shine light on just missing Big and paying tribute and homage to his life.
When you guys were in the studio recording this, did you know how big of a hit it was gonna end up being?
I think we all felt that the record was gonna be a huge record, mainly because of what it was designed to do. It was designed to really pay tribute to our fallen brother, but also it became an anthem for people all over the world, you know, and Puff said it best. He said, this goes out to those who've lost a loved one. And then I just never forget, one day Puff comes into our room and he's like, yo, I need y'all. And we go in there and we just hear the every step I take.
I'll Be Missing You was the first rap song ever to debut on top of the singles charts. And it was produced by Stevie J shortly after Biggie died.
I remember Faith was in there crying, 112 was crying, Puff was crying. Man, a few hours later, we had a masterpiece in our hands.
Derek D. Angeletti was the executive producer of No Way Out, which sold over 7 million copies. What kind of impact do you think No Way Out had on the future of hip-hop and the trajectory that the sound was going?
In my humble opinion, No Way Out was a testament to longevity. It was a testament to collaboration. It was a testament to vision. Along with Life After Death and along with a lot of other albums that we did and a lot of other projects that I myself was a part of, the goal was to make records that long outlast us.
How did everybody come together to kind of lift each other up in spirits?
Well, we came together at that time. It was a trying time for obviously everybody, and of course, obviously Puff. And he wanted to quit. You know, he had the heavy D deaths. We had a lot of things go on in between those, and you know, it was just a trying time. And so the original album was called Puff Daddy and the Goodfellas. That was the original album. But one day, because we were friends, we went to Howard University together. We had a one-on-one just in the room because he wanted to quit and everybody was trying to convince him not to. So we had a one-on-one and, you know, I'm a year older than him. So I just basically say, bros, we didn't come this far to come this far. So, and there's no way out. We gotta do it.
Diddy mentored Usher when he was first starting out. And in 1997, he brought him on as an opening act on the No Way Out tour. I actually heard that you were sent to live with Diddy when you were 14. Can you talk to me a little bit about that experience and what you learned from him in that process?
I think it taught me being in New York City with Diddy and being around the artists of that time, rather it was Jodeci or I'll Be Sure, or even the hit makers of that time, Faith Evans. It was a culture, and I felt like they were ushering me in.
Right.
You know, being able to see how artists did it and what was, you know, really intended you know, for success. I learned that you gotta grind to get it in this industry. And I watched that man grind. So every bit of recognition that he's been getting and celebration for his career, I think it's well deserved. And he is an inspiration to me. Oh, I don't know
what you came to do. These days, Usher is electrifying audiences with his residency at Dolby Live at Park MGM in Vegas, and I was there opening night. I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, but you actually get up close and personal with the audience.
Thank you.
Why was that so important that you did that?
Oh, no, please spoil it. Let them know what you saw and how incredible it was.
Yes.
And what of an immersive experience it was.
Yes.
You're immersed in this experience that allows you to go on a journey with me, to go places that these songs were created in. You know, I take you to Atlanta in a strip club. I take you to a skating rink. I take you all of these different places and celebrate all of the different layers and the genres and things that I've been able to experiment with throughout the years.
And I have to ask, because it is so high energy, what's the workout regimen? I mean, are you chugging protein shakes? Are you in the gym pumping iron? Like, how do you get in shape for a show like this?
But I'll tell you this, the work goes into putting together a show like this, you know? And it's not easy. I do a great deal of meditating to be able to, you know, center myself around it, because it's coming from all different directions. I'm skating. Yeah, I have to definitely engage myself. I actually prepare myself like an athlete.
Now back to Diddy. He gets an assist from Tiffany Haddish, Saraya, and his sons Quincy, Justin, and Christian in the new video for his Bryson Tiller collab, Gotta Move On. The song has been streamed over 40 million times worldwide. When the color peacock, thugging in my Reebok. As for other new music, Kodak Black released a new video for Usain Boo, NBA Youngboy dropped a new song called I Don't Talk, and Lil Uzi Vert unleashed two new songs, Space Cadet and I Know. This weekend in Miami, Kid Cudi headlines opening night of the Rolling Loud Festival. He replaces Kanye West, who dropped out. Future and Kendrick Lamar headline Saturday and Sunday. Jay said I got the thumb. In New York on Saturday, Yo Gotti and Charlamagne Tha God will appear at Roc Nation's United Justice Coalition's inaugural Social Justice Summit.
What's poppin', guys? It's JG here from Blowin' Smoke. If you're a fan of fun, insightful, and breakthrough conversations, then be sure to check out and subscribe to the Blowin' Smoke podcast, a show that covers life experiences and firsthand testimonies from some of the biggest names in your favorite industries. And all that brought to you exclusively by the Revolt Podcast Network, anchored in hip hop, powered by creators.
Jay-Z is on the advisory board, as is Until Freedom co-founder Tamika Mallory.
When I partner with Team Rock and they also find other artists and individuals to help us spread the message, then we are able to help families and hopefully secure justice, because that's what this is all about. Yes, we want to make sure that their names stay in the media. We want to make sure that people don't forget them, that they don't go unnoticed. But at the end of the day, we're fighting for justice. We're fighting to change laws. We're fighting to ensure that people are protected, so we don't have the Ahmaud Arbery's and the Breonna Taylors and the Tanisha Chappelle's, and names go on and on, continuing to happen in our society.
Now we head overseas for the latest developments in the ongoing trial of WNBA star Brittany Griner and Drake's brunch with the international police as we go black all over the world.
Now to Sweden. As the hashtag Freak Drake trends on Twitter, the Honestly Nevermind artist team denied he had been taken into custody. However, 3 days later, Drake confirmed in a vacation dump posted on Instagram that he was indeed detained by Swedish police. The document was issued by the Public Prosecutor's Office for Sweden's National Police Board. The notice lists detainees' rights and notes an interrogation will be held. You could crack the code. Next, we turn our attention to Russia and the Free Brittany Griner movement.
How can she feel like America has her back? Like, I would be feeling like, do I even want to go back to America if I'm I've been gone over 130 days, and I feel like it's been zero effort.
And Griner's fourth day in the courtroom, her team presented a letter stating she was prescribed medical cannabis for chronic pain due to multiple ankle injuries back in 2020.
I will emphasize again the commitment of the United States government at the very highest levels to bring home safely Brittany Griner and all U.S. citizens wrongfully detained.
Griner told the court she accidentally packed vape cartridges carrying less than a gram of cannabis oil, not intending to break Russian law.
I can't imagine what she's going through, and I pray every single day that the people that are in high ups are doing what they need to do to get her home.
As we reach over 150 days that she's been in custody, President Joe Biden signed an executive order to bring home hostages and wrongfully incarcerated detainees. Now to Haiti. Just over a year after President Jovenel Moise was assassinated, gang-led terror has spread throughout the country.
It is a sad day, but this is an opportunity for the country to be united.
Gangs continue to expand territories, even taking over the nation's courts, causing crime to be at an all-time high and forcing thousands of citizens to flee.
It's not Haitian fighting with another country. It's the same Haitian fighting with Haitian for what? For money.
President Moise's widow, Martine, continues to demand justice. And the fate of Haiti is uncertain. Many are concerned that authorities have failed to identify the more than 40 people behind the assassination, and the nation's presidential seat remains empty.
All right, keep it right here. There's much more Revolt Black News Weekly after the break.
My name is Kendrick Ransom, Farmer Shake. I'm the farmer at Golden Organic Farm. I'm also the vice president of Freedom Organization. I currently operate on about 6 acres of land. We have a 2-acre intensive market garden, and I raise my animals on about 4-acre woodlot where we keep them in rotational pastures. Our family farm has up to about 100 acres that we're able to constantly use and to make money off of. Farmers have to be creative these days in order to really keep their operations going, whether they want to just raise vegetables or whether they want to have both vegetables and livestock. Me personally, I have to have those multiple streams of income on the farm. That way we're able to keep going. A lot of our vegetables are seasonal and the meats as well. So we have to keep everything in a nice rotation. That way we're constantly bringing in revenue for the farm. I market and sell my products through various creative ways. For instance, we're working on a Black farm tour that's supporting Black farmers in our community. So being able to create new creative strategies to help support our local farmers is ultimately that's giving me the motivation and giving me the leverage to be able to market my produce, to market my farm. Black farmers have been discriminated against throughout. So it's constantly, how do we find ways to advocate for farmers to get what's been deserved, you know, for over the last 100, 200 years. I talk about land ownership, you know, the challenges that we face as Black farmers of, you know, not having the adequate land ownership that we need in order to grow food on a certain scales, to produce not only on a local community level, but on a regional and national level as well. So once we began to have more land ownership, you know, that was going to ultimately help Black families here in America. What I think will help the next generation of Black farmers the most is advocating for them, listening to them, seeing what they need, seeing how we can help them, and also help providing them with the resources that they need, the technical assistance, connecting them with the federal programs, and keeping your hand on them along the journey. I have noticed a huge interest in young Black Americans as far as agriculture, because they're starting to be more conscious, you know, they're starting to get more connected to what they really feel, and a lot of that stems from the land. A lot of they are seeing it as a trend, but not just a trend, but it's our culture. So we are getting back to our culture, getting back to our roots, and realizing how agriculture plays a big part in our culture.
Before we go, we shine a spotlight on a brave 14-year-old who is still going viral for keeping it unapologetically real.
Nyara Tamga took on a Grand Rapids, Michigan City Council meeting and read a room full of adults after her friend was shot. Her honest and passionate delivery is what makes her our revolutionary of the week.
I don't want to sit here and I don't want to have to beg you to stop killing people.
An emotional young voice heard at the heart of social justice.
I don't trust any of you. I don't trust any of the police officers because you have shown time and time again that we cannot trust you.
Naira Taminga, an activist and poet, demands answers from Grand Rapids Police following the death of Patrick Lioya.
I'm frustrated, can't even begin how absolutely terrified I am to live here.
Patrick, a 26-year-old refugee from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, was fatally shot in the back of the head by Officer Christopher Schur of the Grand Rapids Police Department during a traffic stop.
Every single story about, you know, police brutality, about Black people being murdered, it's heartbreaking, but it was so scary to think of how close it was to where I lived, of how close it was to where I've grown up my whole life, where my cousins or my little brothers growing up. I mean, I just overall was just terrified.
Great. Stop!
If convicted of murder, Schur could be sentenced to life in prison.
I remember just watching the video and just in my head just being like, please, please. Because the second that you see the video, the second that, you know, I saw the first 2 seconds of it, I just, what was running through my mind is just, please let this man go home to his family. And, you know, he didn't get that opportunity.
The incident hit home. Nyara and her classmates hitting the streets demanding action from city officials. Nyara says she's just getting started with the movement.
And it's been kind of eye-opening to see like the amount of people who are for what I'm talking about are coming and expressing what I feel and kind of allowing me to share it with just more people than those 8 adults sitting in front of me.
I see a political hopeful to shake things up. You go, Nyara.
Yeah, Kennedy, she is definitely giving future attorney vibes, right? Well done. That's all for us. We'll see you next time. Later.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.